from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum, North Korea is threatening to walk away from future nuclear talks with the U.S. and return to testing nuclear weapons. Details are emerging that President Trump demanded North Korea turn over all nuclear weapons at the summit in Hanoi last month. Meanwhile, last week it was revealed that the U.S. secretly approved nuclear power work for Saudi Arabia. We'll discuss what these developments mean for U.S. national security. And then at 10:30, University of California President and former Secretary of Homeland Security Janet Napolitano considers climate change and cybersecurity the biggest national security threats, not a crisis at the southern border. We'll talk with her about national security, immigration policy, and her new book, How Safe Are We? And that's next after the news. You're listening to Forum on KQED Public Radio. I'm Michael Krasny. North Korean officials say they are deeply disappointed in the outcome of the nuclear summit in Hanoi last month, and they say they may walk away from future nuclear talks with the U.S. Details are emerging that on the day the Hanoi talks collapsed, President Trump passed a note to Kim Jong-un demanding North Korea turn over all nuclear weapons and bomb fuel. Meanwhile, the U.S. Department of Energy revealed last week that it secretly authorized at least six U.S. companies to sell nuclear technology to Saudi Arabia, which wants to build two nuclear power plants. Here with me to discuss what these developments mean for U.S. national security and foreign relations is Philip Yun, Executive Director and Chief Operating Officer of Plowshares Fund, former Vice President of the Asia Foundation, and a former Senior Policy Advisor at the U.S. State Department. Welcome back to Forum, Philip Yun.
Good to see you. Good morning.
Good to see you again, and good morning to you. Let's track down what is being sort of sleuthing operations. I mean, what is this note that was supposedly handed to Kim Jong-un by President Trump?
So the summit in Hanoi was very interesting because it ended up, as you know, a failure. They just sort of both walked out. And there was an element of you said, I said quality that thrown into question whether or not this whole dialogue could continue. As an example, North Korea, in a very unusual way, said that it asked for partial sanctions, while the U.S. said that it asked for complete, that the North Korea had asked for complete sanctions relief. And then it was unclear what actually was occurring. So for all of us sort of in the inside, we were trying to figure out what these pieces were and why it sort of suddenly broke down. We had suspicions, but there was an article that came out by Reuters that talked about a document that was given by President Trump directly to Kim Jong-un. And after the North Koreans saw this document, they canceled the lunch and basically walked out. And
this is when they started calling us gangsters.
Right, and all this. Yeah. And essentially the elements of this were completely walking back what had been prior discussions. And that essentially was that we wanted immediate, for North Korea to immediately denuclearize. We had talked for a comprehensive declaration of these particular of their program and all the elements. We added chemical and biological weapons, which had not really been discussed, and a whole slew of demands, which seemed to me be completely overreaching. And if you recall, John Bolton in the spring had basically said the same thing. And as a result of that, the North Koreans said, okay, we're not even going to the first summit as a result of this. We are, this is not going to happen. And then Donald Trump had to bring it all back in. So for the North Koreans, I think it was a little confusing where they thought they were going to get some smaller deal. And then Donald Trump presented basically an old proposal that had been completely rejected outright by the North Koreans.
You could almost call it the Libya deal. It had Bolton's fingerprints all over it, just like with Libya, when Libya decided to denuclearize under Gaddafi. And this is curious because it ties in to some extent, does it not, with the fact that North Korea is moving ahead or seems to be moving ahead with missile production?
Well, so there's a yes and no. North Korea has agreed to a missile moratorium and a nuclear test moratorium. These are significant because for North Korea to actually have an operational nuclear weapon that can be reliable, they have to test. They have to continue to test both the missiles and the nuclear weapons. They basically said, we're not going to test. That was part of their agreement. But what they never said, and I would never expect them to say, is that we're going to stop all activity. This is their hedge. This is a way for them to increase their leverage. They never agreed while these talks were going on that they would stop their plutonium production and their highly enriched uranium production. That's the stuff that goes boom. They're producing one nuclear weapon's worth of material every month. That's how they're increasing their leverage. They say they're willing to give this up. You know, we have to test if that's the case. And the missile activity is the same thing. The whole point of the Singapore discussion was to finalize and make that moratorium permanent and to get at what the ongoing activity was. It was sort of an initial down payment. So in that sense, North Korea is continuing. I think the news media has made it a big deal in the sense that the North Koreans are cheating. They're not. And this is something we've expected all along, and I think it's a little bit misleading to say that that's the case.
But we're reading about possible launch from South Korea, aren't we?
From North Korea?
That South Korea believes that North Korea
might
be possibly
launching? Right. You know, I think the big picture that what we're dealing with right now is this breakdown in the Hanoi summit is really saying that the talks are in danger. We're going to hit a rough patch, I have no doubt, over the next couple of months. And what's unfortunate about this is that we had an opportunity to find out if, in fact, North Korea was willing to give these weapons up. Because we're talking with Kim Jong-un, the only person who matters in North Korea, for the first time on an extended basis. And it's really, here's an opportunity to test whether they're willing to give them up. And we're not even going to get to that opportunity. That's what's so frustrating about this.
Well, what about all this personal relationship and love that the president talks about between him and Kim Jong-un? That doesn't necessarily seem to be moving us forward.
Well, I'm not necessarily a supporter of Donald Trump, so that's a disclaimer right now. But with respect to North Korea, I've been supportive of his approach. And that's because, let's give you some context. I've always believed that North Korea negotiations requires top down, from the leader down, and a bottom up approach. For the last 20 years or so, we've only had a bottom up approach, which has failed. Because with North Korea, you need a top down element. And what's been interesting and supportive I have of Donald Trump is that he added the top down element. Now, you need both to succeed. Now, the problem is that because of what happened at the Hanoi summit, the bottom-up element, which is all the technical stuff, which is where the devils are in the details, has been completely poisoned. And so the North Koreans want to preserve the Kim Jong-un-Trump-level dialogue, but they don't want to do anything at the working level because they think it's all smoke and mirrors. So in some ways, Kim Jong-un wants to keep that relationship. And, you know, maybe he thinks he can get a better deal from Donald Trump. But that's where the problem is. And that's where we in the United States need to be concerned, because he doesn't have a grasp of the details that are necessary for this thing to get a good deal for us.
Well, the argument is, though, at least they're talking, and that's at least in the positive vein. And not only at least are they talking, but President Trump apparently has been talking about all kinds of development, the beaches in North Korea and so forth, holding out that. I just want to tie this in with the other story that we were promoting for this segment, though, because the U.S. has approved secret nuclear power to Saudi Arabia, essentially, and we're sharing nuclear technology now, and it's pretty clear that Saudi Arabia, in addition to wanting nuclear power plants, may indeed want to have nuclear power, because they are certainly an adversary to Iran, and they want to have that nuclear power. It may start another whole arms race. Again, in terms of nuclear power in the Middle East, there's a lot of danger there. But I'd like to flesh it out a little with you, Philip. I mean, this has been going on in secret, and it may indeed be rather ominous.
Yeah, so it's hard to say. I mean, the way the law works is that when they do these sort of licenses, okay, let's step back here. Saudi Arabia wants to purchase 16 nuclear power plants, civilian use. For U.S. companies to participate in this.
So they say civilian use.
So they say civilian use, okay? In order for that to be done, the United States has to give licenses for that to happen. And eventually, if the United States wins a bid, there's got to be an agreement, which is called a 1-2-3 agreement that you'll hear about in the coming future, which sets conditions and safeguards. Because the technology for civilian nuclear use is basically the same technology that you would need to develop a nuclear weapon. And these negotiations started about a year ago. So what usual 1-2-3 agreements do not permit what we call enrichment of uranium, because if you continue to enrich and refine it, become highly enriched uranium, which is the stuff of for a nuclear bomb, or reprocessing spent fuel, which becomes plutonium, which is another way to make a nuclear weapon. And the interesting thing is that most countries that want this particular technology, to have nuclear plants, forswear or do not want this ability to enrich or to reprocess. Saudi Arabia, on the other hand, has specifically said they want that capability. So what we're essentially talking about is that we are allowing, the United States is allowing Saudi Arabia to possibly have a path to build a nuclear weapon. And what's disconcerting about this process that we've been talking about is that the United States is, you know, the administration seems to be bypassing the normal checks and balances, which is the Congress, which has the ability to have an input on this. And that's what I think is concerning. If you're concerned about what happened in the wall, you know, this is, you know, because we're talking about nuclear weapons here, you know, that's that makes it all the more focusing the mind of what it could be.
Well, you mentioned top down. This is more top down and more of what I would characterize as pragmatic approach, or at least what comes cloaked under pragmatism. That is the president saying we can make a deal with North Korea. It doesn't matter about what happened to Otto Warmbier, or it doesn't matter what's going on in terms of human rights in that country. And the same with Saudi Arabia and Khashoggi. We're going to do this because it's practical.
Right, right. So this particular episode opens up a host of issues that, you know, maybe your listeners might be interested in asking about or giving their input. But, you know, one is it a good idea for Saudi Arabia to have nuclear weapons? Is that something that, you know, we think is worthwhile? I personally think it's a bad idea. And why are we treating Saudi Arabia a little bit differently than everybody else? That talks about...
There are a lot of speculation about Jared Kushner's role in this, for example.
Exactly. And when you talk about a story that just came out today that talked about the security clearances that involved Jared Kushner and how...
Mentioned in the last hour.
Right, yeah. That he was able to get those. And, you know, what's going on there, right? Is there a quid pro quo? You have the Jamal Khashoggi murder, which, you know, begs the question, should we be dealing with Saudi Arabia at this time or at all? And then there's a larger strategic issue about Saudi Arabia versus Iran, which is essentially a Sunni versus Shia Islam issue. And, you know, this civil war or civil dispute within Islam has been there for a millennium. And do we want to get in the middle of this?
There's a question for you, our listeners. And in fact, if you have questions or if you'd like to join this conversation, let me invite you to join us now. You can do that by calling in on our toll-free number. The number to call, 866-733-6786. We're talking about U.S. companies selling nuclear technology to Saudi Arabia and also about recent developments with respect to North Korea and nuclear talks that fell through in Hanoi and that had, as we say, there's a whole mystery story now to what may have been passed in terms of a note from President Trump to Kim Jong-un. I'd like to hear your thoughts and like to hear any questions or comments you have. Again, you can join us right now at 866-733-6786 with Philip Yun. You can also join us by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going to our website and posting questions or comments there at kqed.org/forum. Click on this segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. We do welcome your involvement. And again, Philip Yun here in studio is Director and Chief Operating Officer of the Plowshares Fund and also former Vice President of the Asia Foundation and former senior policy advisor at the U.S. State Department. Well, at this point, we're not only talking about really United States relations with Saudi Arabia, but we're talking about what may be – just interested in the fact, for example, that we've got an election going on in Israel next week and we've got a lot that's at stake there. Israel and Saudi Arabia now seem to be pretty much allies against Iran. And that's staking Israel is a nuclear power. So if Saudi Arabia becomes a nuclear power, or if this helps at least move Saudi Arabia toward becoming a nuclear power, we're talking about a whole reconfiguration in the Middle East possibly, and an arms race, as I said before, a nuclear arms race.
No, I think that's absolutely right. And that's why what we do with respect to Saudi Arabia, and my hope is that if we decide we want to share nuclear technology, we have what's called the gold standard, which is an agreement that we did with the United Arab Emirates, where they specifically renounce the ability to reprocess and enrich the stuff that, you know, to make the fuel that's necessary. And, you know, if you don't do something like that, what you're doing is, as you know, the Iran deal, the United States basically withdrew and reneged on the Iran deal. I think essentially the Iranians, for the most part, have held pat because I think they're hoping that Donald Trump loses re-election and then we can go back to the status quo ante where the deal was basically in place. So they've been, you know, despite their domestic political pressures, they've stood firm with this. If, in fact, the 1-2-3, that Saudi Arabia has that capability, that increases more pressure on Iran for them to basically, you know, not adhere to the Iran the nuclear deal. And then you're off to the races.
Let's go to our callers. Let's find out what you, our listeners, have to say or ask. And we begin, Peter, with you. Good morning. You're on the air.
Thank you. Thank you for this opportunity and for your guest, whose work is so important. I'm just wanting to struggle publicly here with the difficulty of looking at this fundamental hypocrisy, I believe, in the present established nuclear club saying we're right and you're wrong to a new nuclear power. Isn't there maybe some possibility of concession or some humility, you know, some relief of sanctions, some measure of goodwill, actually as a mode of defense, and shouldn't there possibly be a greater, more public dialogue involving North Korea and the public in a global discussion of how to totally denuclearize the entire world?
The question is really about diplomacy and how diplomacy might work in either of these cases, but more toward North Korea. Philip Young?
Yeah, so there's a one of our grantees, ICANS, it's the International Campaign Against Nuclear Weapons, has been talking about the notion of completely banning all of these weapons. And so that is a dialogue that is ongoing right now. And in fact, ICANS received the Nobel Peace Prize 2017 for their work. I mean, they're just a small group of people in Europe, and they've had a huge impact of creating a new norm here.
But the two main powers, the United States and what used to be the Soviet Union, now Russia under Putin, are moving forward with more nuclear
manufacturing. That's essentially what I think your listener has been talking about is the hypocrisy that's involved in this. I mean, as part of the nuclear nonproliferation treaty, the ones who have recognized and said they have nuclear weapons said that they eventually are going to get rid of these things, but we have yet to do so. And the problem right now is, as you mentioned, the United States is on par to I believe it's something $2 trillion over the next 30 years to renew our nuclear weapons capabilities. I mean, it's really outrageous. And in this time where, you know, there's so many more needs for that money, I think it's outrageous that we're spending that much money for this.
Let me thank the caller, and we'll move on to as many of your calls as we can get to. Amer is next. Amer, welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
So I just wanted to address the point the guest had brought up earlier about this Saudi Arabia-Iran conflict being a Shia-Sunni conflict that's lasted a millennia. I think it's dangerous to bring up this notion of a conflict between Shias and Sunnis when the issue around Saudi Arabia and nuclear energy is so much based on economics, and the U.S. picking winners in this race is really what the central issue is. And that's all I really wanted to say. This conflict's way more about economics than it is about religion.
Well, what do you think, Philip? Your caller makes a point. Agree with it?
Well, I think that, you know, it just depends on how broad your frame is. I think what I was saying is that this particular issue brings to question the notion of Saudi Arabia, who has been a longtime partner and ally, for a variety of reasons. You could argue that a lot of what they have been doing has been antithetical to U.S. interests. And whether it's on human rights, whether it's their support for particular religious, you know, Wahhabism, fundamentalist Islam, and even 9/11. So these are issues that I think are legitimate conversations that we need to talk about and not necessarily just assume that this is something we should continue. And again, I also note that there is this other issue of why are we treating Saudi Arabia differently? You know, this you know, are there conflict of interest here? Is there a quid pro quo? Is there? These are questions that I think are legitimate for us to be talking about.
Well, I'm looking at a question from a listener named Ron who says, does a nuclear deal with Saudi Arabia have anything to do with oil? And then another listener, Noel, writes, Rick Perry, Secretary of Energy, is strangely silent. And certainly Rick Perry was a major figure in this whole operation, the secret operation with Saudi Arabia. But what about oil and a quid pro quo there?
Well, I think that there is, you know, oil is certainly, you know, one piece of all of this. But, you know, the United States now is a fairly large producer of its of our own oil in certain respects. I think this has to do with the stability of the Middle East. And what we've chosen to do is what we've done in the past is, attach our wagon to Saudi Arabia. Now, there are issues about Saudi Arabia. I mean, there's some question about how stable this particular government is. And so that is the larger question of, is it wise for us to allow them or give them a possible path to nuclear weapons? It might be okay right now from a very narrow self-interest. They're our friends. So, you know, there's some people who believe, I don't agree with this, that it's okay for our friends to have nuclear weapons, not our enemies. But, you know, as we've seen with Iran, you know, things can change very, very quickly. And for us to allow that technology and capability to go to Saudi Arabia, only to see in the next 10, 15 years there be a change in government, you know, I think that's, foolhardy.
Talking with Philip Young, Executive Director and Chief Operating Officer of Plowshares Fund, let me thank the caller. And getting some comments here that seem to form a bit of a pattern. Dan says, gee, I wonder whose pocket the profits are going to go in. And Becky says, nothing good will come of this. And Wendy says, is there any way this can end well? I think not, but we'll take more of your calls. And we'll go next to Sacramento and welcome Jaya. You're on the air. Good morning.
Great. Thank you. Good morning. My question is with regard to Israel's position and whether or not there's been either support for this plan, given that it has the potential to change the balance of power so significantly in that region. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for the question. Philip Young.
I don't want to step out in turn. You know, I guess the question is, I'm not really sure exactly what the government of Israel and Netanyahu and Prime Minister Netanyahu has said. So rather than me guessing at this point, I would say that, let me put it this way, the Prime Minister Netanyahu has made Iran the focal point and has made Iran their boogeyman at this stage. And so that has been their focus. Now, what it is with respect to Saudi Arabia, nuclear weapons, you know, again, I'll speculate. My guess is probably they're not thrilled about it, but I don't know what how that translates into policy.
Mike says to nuclearize Saudi Arabia is to create another North Korea. And another listener, Sean, writes, we need to accept that North Korea has no intention of giving up its nukes. These endless and fruitless talks are meant only to give them enough time and space to consolidate their nuclear arsenal. Can we end on a note of hope here as we come to the end of this segment?
Sure, sure. This is what I will say. I don't necessarily disagree with the last comment You know, if people come to me, do I know what North Korea and Kim Jong-un actually wants? No, I don't think anyone does. But what we are doing is we have the opportunity for the first time in, 15, 20 years to talk with the only person that matters, that's Kim Jong-un, to see if there is a way for us to move forward on this. And there are ways for us to construct a deal that is step-by-step, that tests what his intents are, and then we can move forward. If we're going to clamp down on North Korea, I want to make sure I want to make sure that we know that all of this has been a facade. I don't think anyone does. So it's noble. Let's find out. And that's what I think is a great possibility here.
Well, we'll leave it there. Thank you, Philip Young. And when we return, Janet Napolitano joins us. Stay tuned for that.